joining us on the line is Ilanit Chernik from Israel. Ilanit, a very, very good morning to you, and thank you for making yourself available to speak to us.
Thank you so much for having me, Howard.
So you have been covering this extensively. I've been following you on Twitter. You've really been in the thick of it from when this all, excuse the term, exploded on Monday night. Give us your perspective of how this played out from a personal perspective.
Okay, so how it all started was on Sunday night, the IDF went into Gaza under a covert mission. We don't know the details behind that covert mission. It's still under gag order. I don't think it's going to come out for a good while. Mm-hmm. They went in, we think it was a reconnaissance mission to get some information and et cetera, which is something that's done quite regularly, both in the West Bank and in Gaza. It's not an unknown thing.
Right.
And basically, somehow, Hamas operatives, including one of their top officials, found us. And basically, long story short, they tried to surround the car. We had to kind of get ourselves out of it. We lost one of our big Druze covert commanders who commands one of the special unit forces. And this is how this all began. So we ended up in the way of getting ourselves out of it. We ended up killing about 5 Hamas operatives. Hamas then responded with heavy rocket fire over Sunday night. It slowed down by about 2 a.m. and it slowed down. We'd managed to get all of our, we were all accounted for, all the troops had gone in, all the special unit forces that had gone in a van, had managed to get evacuated relatively safely, aside from 2 of our soldiers, one who was killed, unfortunately, the second who was badly injured, but he's doing well, thank God. And that's what kind of got this started. Monday itself was relatively quiet. Yesterday was relatively quiet. We were all expecting something to happen over Monday. Nothing happened. I was quite sure they were going to start something over Monday night. And then we decided that we'd actually go down. And we left at about 6 o'clock. And just before that, we'd had a barrage of about 100 rockets going in. So we left, we got there by 7. It was pretty fast. And we headed down to this area called Kfar Azza, mm-hmm. Which is literally sitting on the border between Israel and Gaza. It's got an incredible viewpoint where you can see straight into Gaza City. And from the other side, you can see into Ashkelon and Sderot. So we were watching from this area where there were rockets coming towards Ashkelon and Sderot, but they weren't coming towards us. So what was happening was we were having like rockets coming over us, but there was no sirens.
Wow.
Because there was no danger to where we were standing.
Wow.
There was a group of other journalists who joined us a bit later, and we had they were TV journalists, so they had lights. The area that we were in, the army had supposedly closed off. They hadn't really. It was just a deterrent to stop people from coming down. And they found us there. The army, there was a car that came and they found us there, and they were not very happy we were there. They told the TV crew who had their floodlights on that Hamas can see exactly where we are, and if we want to put ourselves in direct line of fire, we should turn those floodlights off. So the TV crews kind of didn't.
Right.
And Struz Bob, about 30 minutes later, Hamas sent about 6 or 7 mortars at us. So we were standing there. We didn't even have 5 seconds to run. It wasn't even, we heard the first boom, and then we heard the second one, and we could feel the ground shaking under us, which meant that it was very close by. It was in the field right next to us. And then the Tzeva Adom went off, and as soon as we heard the first boom already, we knew that, and we felt it, we knew that they were trying to send towards us.
So let me just understand. So the Tzeva Adom, the alert didn't go off. It was because you were literally right there.
You were right there.
Right.
So it doesn't go off. You have less than 5 seconds to get to cover from where we were standing.
Which is an impossibility.
So, Yeah, so I mean, it's the alert goes off at least 2 or 3 seconds after that. So we'd already, you know, we'd already been
starting to move,
you know, pummeled by like 5 or 6 mortars by the time the Tevah Dome actually went off. And then once the Tevah Dome finished, like it was already over. It was already over. We came out of where we were taking cover. We were taking cover behind like a concrete building. There wasn't a bomb shelter, so we were taking cover behind the concrete building, to my mother's horror.
I was actually thinking, you know, Ilanita, as you're telling the story, I'm thinking, oh my word, I hope your family is not listening to this.
She knew. I told her before. I messaged her to tell her where we were going.
All right. I'm glad because I would have felt terrible if I got you into trouble, because I'm thinking this and I'm thinking, oh my word, you know, like you were really there. It sounds so scary. What were you feeling? I mean, were you numb? Were you shaken? Were you, was there adrenaline so you didn't feel that? What was going through your mind?
There was a huge amount of adrenaline because once that happened, because I mean, we'd been there for about an hour and a half when that happened, when the other crew came with their lights and whatever. So once that, we'd seen a few rockets, we'd had a few, you know, they try and send into Kfar Aza a little bit and they try and send to, but because we're not a big, you know, the area that we were in isn't a big, you know, there's just kibbutz in there. It's not a big area. So that they know that like if they send stuff there, it's going to be a bit of a so-called waste. So they do send a bit, but it's not a lot. But you see, we were seeing like lots of, we were seeing a lot of over us. We were seeing the Iron Dome, you know, snacking rockets that were coming over. Yet the alarm wasn't going off where we were. So in a way, I wasn't particularly afraid because I knew that aside from that one instance when they had sent mortars towards us, there was, you know, we weren't really in the direct line of fire. What was more frightening was when we went to Ashkelon. We'd heard that Ashkelon had been hit a few times, like directly, and we decided let's actually go to Ashkelon and see what the situation is there.
Ilanita, I just want to stop you for 1 second. I'm chatting to Ilanita Cherny. She is a reporter in Israel. She was very, very close to the action over the last few days, and we're getting an update as to her experience through this, through these events. 34519 or 061-895-1019. If you want to make any comments, if you want to send any questions through, I have noticed the question before asking the comparative cost of a Hamas rocket versus Iron Dome. I will be asking Ilanit that question a little bit further into the interview. Unsigned says, so Israel started this latest mess then. We'll come back to that issue as well. Ilanit, so your part of the story is now you've moved to Ashkelon and there's been real damage and loss of life.
Yeah, so we'd gotten to where one of the buildings was hit. There was an apartment building in one of the poorer neighborhoods of Ashkelon.
Mm-hmm.
And what had happened is that it had hit the top three floors. It was a very heavy missile that it hit. So they were concerned that people had been trapped, but they weren't 100% sure. I spoke with some of the residents who had been evacuated from the building and the buildings around it, because there was a massive gas leak. It had hit part of the gas line.
Wow.
So they were worried that there would be further explosions. So they were trying to get everybody on that street out because of concerns of further explosions. So we were busy speaking. I was talking to some people, and then I did like a Facebook Live. And in the middle of the Facebook Live, we had sirens going off in Ashkelon itself, which in itself was very scary because, you know, then and there, A, you can't see where the rockets are coming from, because at least when we were in Kfar Aza, you could see. You had a solid, you know, there are little dots in the sky. You can see them coming up. So at least we had a solid idea of which direction they were coming from. So we knew if they were coming towards us, if they weren't. There's tall buildings. You can't see anything. Suddenly the Iron Dome's going over. You're hearing, and it's loud. It's very loud because the Iron Dome's right there. So it's very, very loud. It's like quite low. It's, you know, it's not low enough that you can like put your hand up to touch whatever, but it's low enough that you can see it very brightly, and it's very loud. And you're hearing these massive booms going off right on top of you, like massive booms, because they're hitting the rockets that are literally above you. So that in itself was quite scary, because also we were with civilians that were traumatized already, that had already gone through several rocket attacks, They were outside of their homes, so they didn't even have, you know, the capacity to get to a shelter. We took cover in an alleyway next to a building because there was no time to get to a shelter. And it was very traumatizing, I think, for the people. For me, that was what threw me a little bit, because before we'd been watching it all and we hadn't read in the direct
almost from a professional distance. Now you're amongst people where you know you're a target because you're in Ashkelon. You've seen real damage being done, much more real, I guess, that you face that. In terms of the actual event, the one thing that perplexes me, and I asked Anthony Reich about it a little bit earlier, is we are often told the story or led to believe a narrative that there are all these renegade groups in Gaza that Hamas has no control over. The fact that it started as it did and ended as precisely as it did, it gives me that the understanding that Hamas is pretty much in control of the region. Would you agree with that statement?
Most of the time, Hamas has to give the go-ahead to these factions. There will be once in a while here and there, you know, PIJ or one of the smaller factions sending rockets off randomly, and then they get a so-called beating from Hamas for doing it. But in general, Hamas do have control. They do. They you know, the PIJ, which is one of the main factions that actually send rockets in, they have to get permission from Hamas to do it. So Hamas then will claim and say, well, it wasn't us, it was the PIJ, and, you know, they'll throw them under the bus for it. But at the end of the day, they do have to get that okay from them.
That's
will be here and there. You know, but not.
But on the most part, they're pretty much in control. Can we talk about the cost of a missile or a rocket fired by Hamas versus the cost of deploying the Iron Dome?
Okay, so when Hamas send in a rocket, it's usually costing between $500 and $1,000. So that's kind of like their, you know, that's usually, it depends how much explosives are being put into it. It depends what materials are being used, etc. So that's why it can cost between $500 and $1,000 to develop.
So it's a very, very cheap, actually.
It's very cheap. It's very cheap and it's very dangerous, because what they do is they put a lot of shrapnel and all that kind of stuff, and that shrapnel is what can kill you.
Uh-huh.
That all those knots and bolts and pieces of metal and all things that they put inside there, that's what can be very, very dangerous. Never mind the explosion that happens when one of those hits. Because sometimes, I mean, we saw with what happened with this building that I saw, as well as the what happened in Beersheba a few weeks ago, 25 kilograms of ammunition, you know, of explosives sitting in that. So very concerning. And then you look at the Iron Dome, and the Iron Dome, one full battery, which is one full big machine, one full big Iron Dome machine, costs about $100 million.
Whoa.
And then each of those missiles, each one has about 20 missiles, or interceptors, as people call them.
Mm-hmm.
And each one of those interceptors costs $50,000.
After the capital cost of the actual Iron Dome system, or 10, or each one of those that are going to be spread throughout Israel, the cost of actually firing it is $50,000, even though you can't ignore the $100 million setup cost.
And usually what happens is you have two going off at the same time. That's what usually happens. There's usually two, so it's about $100,000 each time the Iron Dome.
So it's $100,000 effectively versus $1,000 at the most.
Yeah.
Incredible. It's actually a very powerful tool then that Hamas can use to financially impact on Israel as well. It's an economic war.
Yes, it's concerning. And that's the concern, yeah, because, you know, we're spending a lot of money each time the Iron Dome battery goes off. You know, it's going for several rockets. Just remember also, the Iron Dome battery only goes off when it's going straight for civilian area. If they can predict that the trajectory is going to be going into an open field, it doesn't go off. There's no need for it to go off because it's not going to be endangering any lives. Unfortunately, with Ashkelon, Hamas's precision was pretty solid. That's the unfortunate situation here. It was pretty solid. PIJ's, that was pretty solid. They had an idea. I mean, they hit a few houses directly. Even over yesterday, they hit in Sderot, they hit in Yad HaMordechai, in a whole bunch of areas. They managed to hit houses directly. Thank God people were in their mamads, in their bomb shelters. But it's kind of a miracle that this time around there weren't a lot of fatalities. Unfortunately, as we know, there was one fatality on our side,
right,
which happened to be a Palestinian from Hebron. So,
right, which just boggles the mind as well, because that just shows once again that the people that get hurt, you know, that's the most difficult part of this whole story, is the lack of condemnation around the world, and I'm looking at here very, very specifically in South Africa, means that people genuinely actually don't even care about the Palestinians. And that's what saddens me to such a great degree, is that people very simply don't care for the Palestinians, because otherwise somebody would be condemning Hamas, and yet nobody does that.
And just to add, the bus driver, I don't know if you saw that video, there was Hamas directly hit a bus that had soldiers on it. The soldiers had managed to get off. There were 50 soldiers on the bus. They were being brought down to the south once the situation had started getting quite bad. And the bus driver who got injured was an Arab as well. So, you know, we've got injuries. There were at least 94 injuries altogether following this volley on our side.
Right.
So you've got, and amongst that are Palestinians and Arabs. So it's very clear. It's very, very clear that Hamas don't care who they go for. It doesn't matter.
But Hamas don't care for their own people. And that's a sad thing in all of this, because who is caring for the Palestinians? Genuinely, who is caring for the Palestinians? The Israelis have the Israeli government, who will do anything to protect them. Who is looking after the citizens and the residents of Gaza? Not Hamas. So who is? But when the world remains silent, those are the people that are suffering.
That's the thing, and that's the concern, is that they, a lot of the time they do this. You know, they start these. You know, what could have happened is, you know, they would have sent in a bit of a volley on Sunday night after this operation went wrong, and that could have been the end of it. Do you know what I'm saying? That could have been the end of it.
Right.
Instead, just to take away attention from what's going on within Gaza,
of course,
they cause this continuous conflict.
Right.
And just for all your listeners to know, the Kerem Shalom crossing, which is the humanitarian crossing that we're sending things through, you know, food, fuel, everything, it carried on as normal the whole of yesterday and the whole of yesterday, despite having nearly 500 rockets shot at us. We still allowed it to stay open, and we still continue to send in humanitarian aid.
Funny, I haven't read that in the press in South Africa anyway. Here's a message for you. Ilanit, oh my goodness, I can't believe we are listening to Ilanit, who would sit so quietly at our Shabbos table. Take care. That's from Gail Levy in Ramat Beit Shemesh. Well, of course, Ilanit is a journalist. She was sitting there and observing. That's what she was doing there. And Gimple says 50 to 1, a similar ratio to Israeli versus Palestinian Nobel laureates. So, and unfortunately, that is where we have to leave it. As fascinating as this is, Ilanit, just stay safe and responsible, and just keep doing what you're doing. We'll keep checking in with you to see how you are doing and how it's going. Just keep up the unbelievable work and the unbelievable reporting that you are doing. Time is 8:29. That was Ilanit Chernik speaking to us from Israel, a first-hand experience of the last few days with Hamas rockets firing on Israeli civilian targets.